Hare Krishna. This is Dhanadhar Swami. Can someone please say hello?
Hare Krishna.
Oh, okay. What's happening now is I'm in a car. I'm on my way to Mayapur to host 35 Iranian devotees. So I'll try my best to give class, and I hope the connection goes. Reading from Jiva Dharma. Chapter 9, Material Science and Nitya Dharma. Om Jnanatim Anandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksun Samyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Chayam Rupa Kadamayam Siddhati Patadantitam Vanshakalpa Kadujyascha Kripashindu Vayedicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, greetings from on the road to Delhi. We're in the chapter of Jiva Dharma about material. Well, we know the story of Jiva Dharma is about a Kunj place in Godwin Dweep, where in the part of Jiva Dharma when we're in this in Godwin Dweep. This is the generation after Lord Chaitanya, and as people come there and become enlightened according to their particular misconception, a particular aspect of the philosophy is presented. And we're following the life of one Mahari Mahasai. He was an aristocratic Brahmin. Gopal, I'm giving class. That's why I'm talking now. The aristocratic Brahmin landowner, and he somehow or other, he was elderly. He had his son. One of his sons was a teacher of logic. And despite their opposition, somehow or other, by the transcendental arrangement, he retired at the end of his life to this ashram. And he became quite enlightened, quite advanced in spiritual life. And now he's become initiated. His name is Advaita. And he's completely satisfied in chanting the holy name of Krishna. And actually, when you always chant, you actually do become satisfied, because that's satisfaction. Satisfaction is love, and kirtan is an expression of love. When you chant, then the love in your heart increases, and you feel that love, at least at a certain level of advancement. So he's satisfied. He's an elderly man, and then his friend, another Brahmin, Digambar Upadhyaya, his friend, returned from his career. He was working as a very high minister in the court of the Mughals, and he's a Shakta worshiper. And that was very prominent in Bengal. They worship Durga, the material energy. And basically, it's just materialistic philosophy. They believe that that's the... And they believe in artificial... culture and civilization, dishonest civilization, where you're really quite nasty, but you kind of have external manners and you know how to dress nice. And material civilization. And he's just shocked that his best friend, Lahari, now who is Advaita, has become a Vaishnava. Especially, you know, after the generation of Lord Chaitanya. What happens in any spiritual... What happens in any spiritual group, and one has to be very vigilant, that religion has certain attractive aspects, and, you know, culturally, certainly, especially with Vaishnavism, with the music, and, you know, people are basically God-conscious, and, you know, people just tend to, for many, many reasons, appropriate for their false ego and for their sense gratification religion. And then they change the pure tenets of religion, which is bhakti, which is selfless service and sacrifice and dedication to God. And they tend to use it for their own desires. And one way is it becomes business. And therefore, people tailor the religion and market their religion according to the material desires of the people. Well, that's one way that happens. Or people just have impersonal tendencies. And, you know, or people sincerely come into religion and then gradually their material desires, they try to suit it to them, and so much so, it's so much so that our philosophy supports our attachments. You can have philosophy to become free of your attachments, and you can have philosophy to support your attachments and support your ego and so many things. So it tends to become appropriated. And so he in the name of religion, people were worshiping the material energy, which is a manifestation of Dharma. So he had this vision, this worldview, this faith, that to learn how to enjoy the material energy is actually religion. I know when I grew up in my family, a Jewish family, we did not worship God. We did not go to shul. And certainly, you know, my grandfather used to go a little bit. You know, we didn't go, and we went once a year, and it was a social thing. And what became the faith of my parents was materialism. You know, and maybe the highest part of materialism, I mean the best part of it may be family, but still generally materialism. That their real faith, even though they say they believe in God, the real faith becomes promoting oneself, you know, of moving ahead and controlling the material world. And when people become spiritual, they become shocked. Even though this was, you know, when I became a devotee, I remember I told my parents that I was going to follow the four regulative principles. And they took me to a doctor. But they actually thought that celibacy was almost like a disease. But the doctor, you know, he said, no, I know many things, there's no problem. But that's what becomes people's faith in the name of religion. And so he's shocked, and he's going to go visit Advaita now. and he comes to see him, and Advaita sees that his friend has now become a bad association. And one of the principles, as we learned in the last chapter of the Madhyam Vaishnava, is, you know, his advancement or degradation depends on where he shares his heart especially with, you know, worldviews. People, some are innocent, they don't really have, but when people actually have a view that is antithetical to Krishna consciousness, you really can't be, those people can't be your friends anymore. And it obviously will hurt your devotion. So he sees that this person, there's not much he can do, but he begins to discuss this question. And the two questions is, what is civilization and what is material science? In relationship to Nitya Dharma, this book is Jiva Dharma, in relationship to the soul. So, before that, I should just explain to you, you know, I just came from a japa period with 35 Iranians, and yesterday I took them out to the fields of Vrindavan for kirtan and to have the famous Vrindavasi rotis, and it's just wonderful to see these people. I mean, they have absolutely no inhibition to opening their hearts and chanting with full enthusiasm. And even embarrassing, because I was in a room in the MBT and I had 35 people and I gave a job and then I had to go. They're going to meet me tomorrow. And they all came out in front of the MBT for kirtan. So that was kind of embarrassing to me. I never liked to take the position of a big guru. But I also realized that it's healthy for them, especially being from Muslim countries. And all these people are not really, they're not all devotees. There's just one person there that's giving classes and they come. And it's just wonderful. And, you know, several of them have been in America because these type of people, the people that are, one lady was telling me, she said, I so much regret it. In 1967 to 1969, my husband was a professor of biochemistry at the University of California at Berkeley. And I saw the devotees chanting, and I was just so attracted that I was walking behind them, listening to the chanting. She said, I'm so unfortunate that I waited another 30 years to take it up. And they gave me so much. They're very loving. Iran has the best dried fruits and nuts in the world. I mean, you never tasted a pistachio, you never tasted an almond, a date, a fig. Sweet lemons, my God. Everyone brings you so much stuff. So, such nice people. And I'm looking forward to serving them in Mayapur. I think Gail and others met Sudeshri. She came to New York this is mostly her. And when the is served, so let's go on. So Digambar said, some people say that society is advancing with the increase of knowledge in the world and eventually be like heaven and earth. This is basically the materialistic worldview. You can have really two worldviews in one sense. Not really, but two basic worldviews is, of course, theistic, I always say, or you look at the world. That's the evidence. Now, what is the cause? Is it random molecules, or is it being or consciousness? And it's hard to understand, if we do believe in an objective morality, how its source cannot be consciousness. I can't figure out anybody can come to the conclusion that if everything is deterministic, and because that's what it means. You have to be a determinist. It's all just molecules, then you're not responsible for your own thoughts. You're not responsible for your own deeds. It's already programmed by some kind of evolutionary process. I don't understand then how can someone turn... they can come to the conclusion that's an objective morality, although they believe it strongly. And if you bring strongly that there's an objective morality, then the source of all being has to be a supreme consciousness, otherwise known as God. Anyway, this is the material science. They believe that, you know, one day we'll conquer disease, one day we'll conquer death, one day we'll make everyone happy. This is their conception. By science, we will actually move forward. I always like to say when I first came back from India after many, many years, and I went to the supermarket with my mother, and I put all the things on the counter, when I left, they didn't have that automatic, that code where it just automatically registers, and I was shocked. And I said, things have advanced so much. But then I thought to myself, wait, this is not our philosophy. And then I said, well, the quality of life hasn't improved. And that's actually a fact. The quality of life, it doesn't improve. Actually, I could just see that, you know, even the modern civilization, I could just see that, you know, how difficult it is in many, many ways for people. And then you go through a simple, you know, on my way to Govardhan, you go through a simple village. And it's, you know, it's not very technologically advanced, but there's a certain happiness to the people. Advancement is advancement in consciousness, not in things. So you have to actually see what things actually advance one in consciousness. And what society advances one in consciousness. So that's the real question. And material science, yeah, they'll advance. They think they'll advance. But we see what happens, even modern medicine. I'm thinking of doing a seminar on death, and I had a book by the famous atheist Christopher Hitchens called Mortality. And it was his memoirs as he's... And he said the irony is now he can afford and be at the best hospital, but then sometimes what the best hospital does is just prolong your torture. How ironic. They prolong your torture and they deplete your family expenses. So it didn't seem like people died as painfully previously. in a natural death in a village, and, you know, among your family and your friends. Okay, maybe you know, science can prolong the life another 5 years, but what's the quality of that life? And what has the modern living done to the life itself? Probably shortened in other ways. So, you know, you don't seem to have that kind of... And therefore, Prabhupada, when he was going in his last days, he said, don't take me to the hospital. Don't, you know, stick me full of tubes. You know, it's just so short-sighted. Because of the consciousness. So, Digambar, the materialist, says, Advaita, it will be heaven on earth. And Advaita said, this is fortunate. This is simply, excuse me, fantasy. It is quite extraordinary that people have faith in this. And it is even more bizarre that others have the audacity to propagate such a view without actually believing it themselves. This is bizarre. It's fantasy. Heaven on earth? And then Advaita says there are two types of knowledge. Paramattika, knowledge relating to the eternal truth, while Lokika, knowledge refers to this transcendental world. Now, these are two important philosophical terms. We don't use them so much in Islam, but they are legitimate Sanskrit terms. Paramattika, transcendental knowledge. Lokika is temporary knowledge. So he said, Paramattika knowledge does not seem to be increasing. On the contrary, in most cases, knowledge has been corrupted and deviated from its original nature. Only Lokika knowledge seems to be on the increase. So material world, science is increasing material knowledge, but not spiritual knowledge. And which is important? Material or spiritual knowledge. So it's not increasing spiritual knowledge, it's increasing material knowledge. So what he's saying, that should be the judgment of the society's success. Is it increasing spiritual knowledge and spiritual awareness, or material knowledge and material awareness? Does the jiva have an eternal relationship with Lokika knowledge? Is that going to bring you beyond death, material knowledge? Do you actually have an eternal relationship with that knowledge? You know, what is the value of that knowledge ultimately? I mean, most of the things you learn in school, you never even apply, but material knowledge, okay, it gives you a certain facility. People should be trained in it to a certain degree, but it's just not as important as spiritual knowledge. The gift I got from Srila Prabhupada is spiritual knowledge. And that's the greatest gift, because without that, your life is hell. When Lokika knowledge again increases, people's minds become distracted by temporary material pursuits, and they neglect the original spiritual truth. So in fact, when material knowledge increases, then you seem to pursue temporary things more. And you neglect the original spiritual truth. So isn't this perceptive? It's perceptive. You know, there was one conservative, I'm not promoting his views, but what was his name? William F. Buckley. And, you know, I mean, he was a Catholic and a bit of an intellectual. And he went to Yale and he saw that, you know, where was God? Where was God in Yale? So where was God? I firmly believe the more Lokika Gyan increases, the more duplicitous a civilization becomes. This is great misfortune for living beings. So what is the increase of material science, material so-called knowledge? And this is unfortunate because people pursue spiritual less. Think about misfortune. Why? Wait, as I said before, human life is very short. The jivas are like travelers at an inn, and they should use this brief span of life to prepare themselves for the ultimate destination. It would be sheer foolishness if travelers staying in an inn were so caught up in improving the conditions of their lives, their stay, that they forgot their destination. So you say, this is what material life does. It's a temporary place, and you forget where you're going. A culture and society knows that material life is for spiritual life. Material life is so that you can aim for the absolute truth. It's a temporary place. You're traveling to a destination. You live someplace for some time. You stop in a hotel, but you don't decorate it. I'm convinced that material knowledge should be used only as much as it's needed to maintain one's livelihood. There is no necessity for excessive material knowledge and its companion, material civilization. For how many days will this earthly litter remain? Digambar, I see that I've fallen into the clutches of an unyielding renunciate. Then does society serve no function at all? Advaita, that depends on the composition of the society. He's not saying that society doesn't perform a function, and material knowledge and material science and civilization doesn't perform a function, but it has to be in relationship to the destination. Okay, you know, you stop at a hotel, pick out a good place that's clean and comfortable, you know, that has the right food, so that you'll be healthy for your travels. One second.
The person you are speaking with has put your call on hold. Jis vyakti se aap baat kar rahe.
Okay, Hare Krishna, back again. He said the function served by a society of Vaishnavas is highly beneficial to jivas, but a society of non-Vaishnavas, society that is merely secular, serves no function. So he's not recommending a theocracy, but the society in God we trust. It should have some spiritual objective. America is a democracy, but based on God-conscious principles. But he said, but enough of this topic. Tell me, what do you mean by material science? So now there'll be a discussion of material science. Digambar, the Tantra Shastra. Tantra means the science of using material and energy. That's what Tantra is. Even in Krishna consciousness, we have Tantra Deity worship. We're using material energy for a higher objective. So that's what Tantra means, that how to use material energy. So he's saying, and there's different Tantra Shastras. So he's saying the Tantra Shastra has delineated many types of material science. Material science includes whatever knowledge, skill, and beauty are to be found in the world, as well as all the various branches of knowledge, such as military science, medical science, music, dance, and astronomy. Material nature, Prakriti, is the prime mortal power, and by her potency, she has manifested this material universe and all varieties in it. Each and every form is a byproduct of this potency and accompanied by the knowledge or science corresponding to it. So then basically, that's the Vedas. The Vedas gives knowledge of everything. We're in the world, but it gives also the knowledge of how that knowledge is used to transcend. Well, the Tantra Shastras he's talking about just tells you how to enjoy that knowledge, and that's the purpose of life. Not to become detached, not to have a spiritual destination. So, he says, when one acquires that knowledge, one becomes liberated from sins to Mother Nistarini, that's material nature. The Vaishnavas do not seek this knowledge, but we Shaktas will obtain liberation on the strength of it. Just consider how many books have been written in pursuance of this knowledge by great men, such as Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and the famous Haki. So, I'm going to have to stop here for many, many reasons. I tried to give you something, but if anybody would like to ask a question, I can do that now. Okay? Can anyone say hello to that? I know that I was able to speak to people today.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, are you able to hear?
Very well.
Oh, okay. I mean, because you have to, you know, they built this Jamuna Express, which is a four-lane highway going every, from Vrindavan to Delhi. So we used to go through elephants and buffalo carts and camel carts. And so somehow or other, there's a paved highway. And we can hear. It's a little challenging, but I was able to say something. I should say also, Gail, we sent you a little message, and Savitri, and
Megan,
we were there, we said hello.
Yeah, I responded
and,
by email.
Yeah. And Megan,
did you get
that? Married tomorrow with the daughter. Yeah,
wow.
I did, that's right, I remember. And Megan will get married tomorrow with the daughter.
Wow.
So,
I got a wind of that.
Yeah. What a gentleman. Such a wonderful devotee.
Uh-huh.
So it's nice to see. Okay. Gail, any questions?
Well, not so much. I mean, I was just thinking a little bit when you said that, a democracy... we don't have to become a theocracy. We could somehow, even with a democracy, work toward self-realization type thing.
Well,
you know?
I wanted to make that point because when you start to read these things, people can think we're recommended the Islamic, Syrian, Iraqi states or something like that, you know,
I was just wondering how possible
the Vedic model was so much different also, you know, because the kings weren't the priests. The Brahmins didn't have the power, so it's not a theocracy in that way either. The priests were not the ones, but they had their power, but it was advisory. So I just wanted to clear up that misconception that wasn't talking about a theocracy where religious people rule are the kings. Not religious, but the priests are the, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to say hello?
Best wishes to Megan for her wedding.
Okay. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm going a day before it. And her husband will come to America.
Yeah, I heard through the grapevine.
He's really a very, very evolved Vaishnava.
Mm-hmm.
A very evolved. He's actually a Bhattacharya.
Oh, interesting. That's interesting.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Yes, Maharaj, this is Katya. Hello.
Oh, Katya. So nice that you can listen. Yeah. Thank you. Very good.
Thank you so much.
Good. No, I appreciate that you call in from Moscow. A lot. I appreciate that. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This is Champaka.
Champak. Hare Bhau. Great.
Hare Krishna.
Good to
see
you
soon, right? My I'm sorry?
Okay. Do you know that you know that your friend Megan's getting married, right?
No,
can
I tell
you
didn't
that?
Know that.
Okay, the day after tomorrow.
Wow. In Vrindavan.
Actually, tomorrow. Tomorrow. Yes.
Oh, wow. I'm
anyway,
so surprised.
Megan. Yeah. Anyway, you'll meet him because he'll come to America. Very nice man.
Wonderful.
Okay, so Champak, really happy that you're listening to the classes. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you so much for a beautiful class. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, Gordon Bhaktas.
Okay, we'll see you. We're going to do a program at your house, too. That's so nice. Okay. 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 Hare Krishna. Anybody else? Okay, we'll go now. Bunch of culprit to your sacrifice.